This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday 6th of April 2018. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. So we'll begin with the usual regular notices, and the first is to say that if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. As you listen to the recording, please remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more reminder, and these are for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, so the most recent first is on the list. And so, let's look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. The readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
David Dalton.
Hello.
Standing in for Richard Martin, who's not well today, but thank you for coming. And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And so, on to the news. The leading headlines this week are District hailed as amongst the best, and the theatre's £750,000 proposals to secure its future. And the first headline story is from Jerry, please.
Winchester has been named as the best rural area to live in the South East and narrowly missed out on the top three nationally, according to a national survey. The city was ranked fourth in the UK, behind the Orkney Islands, Rutland in the East Midlands, and Wychhaven in West Midlands. The rankings were released as part of the Halifax 2018 Rural Areas Quality of Life Survey, which looks at aspects of life, including employment and education, as well as social and environmental factors. Orkney secured the top spot for a second year running after scoring well on employment, average spend per pupil on education, low anxiety levels, low crime, small primary class sizes, and consistently high scores in life satisfaction and happiness. The North East had no areas in the top 50, with Northumberland ranked at 95. Russell Galley, Halifax Managing Director, said, "With strong education and employment levels, low crime rates, and residents loving life, not to mention breathtaking wide open spaces, the Orkney Islands have retained the crown of Britain's best rural place to live." Looking at how rural quality of life varies across the country, he said rural areas in the South East receive higher weekly earnings, while those in the East Midlands have larger property sizes. The top rural areas, according to Halifax: 1. Orkney Islands, Scotland; 2. Rutland, East Midlands; 3. Wychhaven, West Midlands; 4. Winchester, South East. 5, Waverley, South East, 6, Craven, Yorkshire on the Humber, 7, Richmond, Yorkshire on the Humber, 8, Stratford-on-Avon, West Midlands, 9, Uttlesford, East of England, 10, Rydale, Yorkshire on the Humber, 11, South Oxfordshire, South East, 12, Selby, Yorkshire and the Humber, 13, St Edmundsbury, East of England, 14, Suffolk Coastal, East of England, 15, Purbeck, South West, 16, Hambleton, Yorkshire and the Humber, 17, West Oxfordshire, South East, 18, Harborough, East Midlands, and 19, Monmouthshire, Wales.
Thank you, Gerry. And David, your headline, please.
Theatre's 750,000 proposals to secure its future. The financial fortunes of the Theatre Royal in Winchester have been transformed in this last year. The new boss said the surplus this year was set to wipe out the £90,000 deficit that had accrued over 6 of the last 7 years. Chief Executive Derek Newland, who took over in March 2017, unveiled his vision for the theatre, including a £750,000 revamp of the Jury Street venue over the next 3 to 4 years. Work would be done to the cafe, bar and box office, and improvements also include air conditioning, live streaming and LED lighting to make it both more comfortable and cheaper to run. Mr. Newland told the Town Forum last Wednesday that the venue needed to invest in the infrastructure to allow it to increase its revenue earnings potential. His plans include revamping the area between the theatre and the Discovery Centre, including the bottom of Tower Street. The theatre had made a deficit or loss for 6 of the last 7 years. Clearly that was unsustainable and put the organisation at some risk. Mr. Newland said, "We need to increase footfall and the daytime offer. We can no longer appear to be closed in the day. We need to make the theatre feel more accessible. It needs to stop feeling scary to come inside. We have more to do to place the theatre at the heart of the city and the district. We have to be bold and we have to be brave to secure this organisation in the decades to come. We won't just be a hall for tribute bands. We are an artistic organisation with artistic intentions. The reasons for the improved performance is an increase in the show's Sweating the Assets and tighter financial control." Mr. Newland acknowledged that maintaining the financial improvements would get harder, but now it could show to potential funders that it had stabilised its finances. His predecessor, Mark Cortis, had looked at increasing the number of seats from 400 to around 475, but Mr. Newland said the benefits of such a small increase would be limited. The major shows that always sell out, such as Top Comedians, usually see the theatre only getting about 25% of the income. There are 5 new trustees and a new chairman of operating charity the Live Theatre Winchester Trust, Steve Gates, the former boss of Winchester-based Denplan. Other changes include a 5-year partnership with the university that aims to better retain graduates in the city. On the Hat Fair, he said that the theatre was committed to the move to North Walls for the 5-year duration of the business plan, enabling greater revenue to be made by charging stallholders because of the increase in space. Mr. Newland said, "We did not take the decision lightly because of the history. Oram's Arbour is a beautiful spot with a history of community gatherings for many hundreds of years. The reason was partly due to capacity. North Walls is larger and it is flat. There were real challenges about what acts could be presented on that slope. City councillors were pleased to hear the financial news. Dominic Hiscock said, "This is brilliant work, well done. It is great what you have done." He asked about the Woolly Hat Fair, and Mr. Newland said its future depended on grant.
Sorry. And David, your headline, please.
Theatre's 750,000 proposals to secure its future. The financial fortunes of the Theatre Royal in Winchester have been transformed in the last year. The new boss said the surplus this year was set to wipe out the £90,000 deficit that accrued over six of the last 7 years. Chief Executive Derek Newland, who took over in March 2017, unveiled his vision for the theatre, including a £750,000 revamp of the Jury Street venue over the next 3 to 4 years. Work would be done to the cafe, bar and box office, and improvements also include air conditioning, live streaming and LED lighting to make it both more comfortable and cheaper to run. Mr. Newland told the Town Forum last Wednesday that the venue needed to invest in the infrastructure to allow it to increase its revenue earnings potential. His plans include revamping the area between the theatre and the Discovery Centre, including the bottom of Tower Street. The theatre had made a deficit or loss for six of the last 7 years. Clearly that was unsustainable and put the organisation at some risk. Mr. Newland said, "We need to increase footfall and the daytime offer. We can no longer appear to be closed in the day. We need to make the theatre feel more accessible. It needs to stop feeling scary to come inside. We have more to do to place the theatre at the heart of the city and the district. We have to be bold and we have to be brave to secure this organisation in the decades to come. We won't just be a hall for tribute bands. We are an artistic organisation with artistic intentions." The reasons for the improved performance is an increase in shows sweating the assets and tighter financial control. Mr. Newland acknowledged that maintaining the financial improvements would get harder, but now it could show to potential funders that it had stabilised its finances. His predecessor, Mark Cortis, had looked at increasing the number of seats from 400 to around 475, but Mr. Newland said the benefits of such a small increase would be limited. The major shows that always sell out, such as Top Comedians, usually see the theatre only getting about 25% of the income. There are five new trustees and a new chairman of operating charity, the Live Theatre Winchester Trust, Steve Gates, the former boss of Winchester-based Denplan. Other changes include a five-year partnership with the university that aims to better retain graduates in the city. On the Hat Fair, he said the theatre was committed to the move to North Walls for the five-year duration of the business plan, enabling greater revenue to be made by charging stall holders because of the increase in space. Mr. Newland said, "We did not take the decision lightly because of the history. Oram's Arbour is a beautiful spot with a history of community gatherings for many hundreds of years. The reason was partly due to capacity. North Walls is larger and it is flat. there were real challenges about what acts could be presented on that slope. City councillors were pleased to hear the financial news. Dominic Hiscock said, "This is brilliant work, well done. It is great what you have done." He asked about the Woolly Hat Fair, and Mr. Newland said its future depended on grant funding from the City Council. Councillor Guy Ashton said, "I am delighted to see the financial transformation, a fundamental turnaround." Councillor Ian Tate said, "I remember a chief executive who said, 'If you don't continue funding us, we will close down.' So I am pleased to hear what Mr. Newland has to say."
And thank you. So next we have the death notices, and that will be followed by Claire with the Christian comment. The death notices are Allardyce, Sheila Gregson Allardyce, gave her last breath on Wednesday, the 14th of March, aged 92.
Gregory, Sheila Gregory, passed away peacefully on 27th of March, aged 88 years.
Johns, Joyce Johns, passed on 22nd of March, aged 91.
Peacock, Doug Peacock, on 26th of March, peacefully, aged 82.
Reed, Mike Reed, passed away peacefully at home on the 1st of April. Claire, can we have your Christian comment, please?
Certainly. This time, it's written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, and he has headed it, Ants Take Away at Easter. The trial of Ant McPartlin happened long before he appeared in Wimbledon Magistrates Court yesterday. Shortly after he was arrested for drink driving following a three-car crash in southwest London, the media splashes his shame all over the internet, and a video emerges of him getting out of his Mini, looking dazed after the accident. The media machine makes our celebrity gods, and helps us all to worship them as we tune in to watch them in our millions. We lap up Britain's Got Talent, Saturday Night Takeaway, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But if the media makes our celebrity gods, it also destroys them. So when Ant did something wrong, he was judged by the media, even before he had his day in court. All of a sudden, he was a liability, and both ITV and Suzuki, who were sponsoring the Saturday night show, dropped him like a hot potato. Quite understandably, ITV didn't want their ratings to go down, and Suzuki can't be seen to sponsor a celebrity who can't drive even a Mini safely. One moment, Ant is on top of the world. The next, he's in rehab, his career in shreds. What does his future hold now? The story of Easter takes a similar turn. On Palm Sunday, Jesus is the bee's knees, riding into Jerusalem to the applause of the crowd, evoking images of Israel's greatest King David. People flock around him and treat him like royalty. He's a stunning teacher, and he bamboozles the religious leaders of the day and makes quite a name for himself. However, by Good Friday, he's hit rock bottom. Vulnerable, falsely accused of charges that threaten his very life. He is mocked, ridiculed, and put on popular trial before the social media of the day. A crowd of people call for him to be crucified. Jesus' nightmare turns to reality, and he suffers the most painful, slow execution known to humankind, crucifixion. The future of a crucified person means only one thing, death. On the face of it, separated by 2,000 years, Ant and Jesus have travelled a similar journey from fame to desolation. But what makes their stories different is how Jesus rose back to life. The power of God raised him from his deathbed, and he appeared alive and well to his friends. Jesus promised his disciples that the power that raised him from the dead would also be available to them. The power at the heart of the cross and resurrection is the power of forgiveness. Christians believe that God forgives all that we have done wrong when we accept Jesus rose from death. Forgiveness is the power that can overcome bad things, like drink driving or drug addiction. It is a power that transforms lives and raises up those who have lost all they once held dear. If Ant wants to have a future, we have to forgive him for what he has done wrong. The source of all forgiveness is the Easter story. If Ant wants to take away this Easter message, it could yet see him rise again. And that was written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester School of Mission.
Thank you very much, Claire. And we're moving on to letters to the editor now. And as ever, there's quite a mixed bag, and we have 9 for you this week. Jerry, will you start us off with the first, please?
Yes, and the first one comes from Judge Derwin Hope and is headed Repeat History. Winchester City Council's proposal to build over the Silver Hill site without proper excavation and evaluation of the archaeology beneath it defies belief. This area is one of the most sensitive urban archaeological sites in the country, and nothing short of a full-on site survey of the whole area should be stipulated before any development is planned and commenced. Indications in the latest supplementary planning document that contentment can be had from a desk-based assessment or something ad hoc on a site-wide basis are completely wide of the mark and do no justice whatever to the situation here. It reinforces the view that those in the City Council who dealt with Silver Hill 1 have not fundamentally changed their approach when now dealing with Silver Hill 2, and that there's an urgent need to completely change this situation to prevent history repeating itself. Previous experience with the Council over Silver Hill 1 showed a failure by them to listen to consultation and the considered wishes of the people of Winchester. Consultation took place over a 4-year period and the development plan published in 2002. Immediately, the council ignored its provisions, failed to provide for an archaeological survey as it stipulated, and repeatedly ignored the competitive tendering provisions required by the law. They acted unlawfully for years and had their eventual plans overturned by the High Court and promptly sought to go back to a scheme that they themselves had discredited, which eventually failed. It's been a tale of incompetence on a grand scale, paid for by the people of Winchester. Few realise that Winchester City Council now own the vast majority of the land on the Silver Hill site. Therefore, any grant of planning permission by them to a developer has the direct or indirect result of granting planning permission to themselves. They now have a huge financial stake in the whole project, and the only responsible way forward is to have the matter called in by the minister for proper, independent assessment and decision. Judge Derwin Hope, Christchurch Gardens, St Cross, Winchester.
This letter asks, dig or not to dig? Sir, it was interesting to read your columnist, Joanna Lewis, and the letter signed by around 100 people calling for major archaeological work in advance of Silver Hill redevelopment. That was the Chronicle of March 29th. The approach seems to be that there should be a massive archaeological excavation over the whole site before the development is planned in detail to take advantage of any interesting archaeology discovered. Who is to pay for the work needed? This is conservatively to be measured in millions of pounds and would significantly delay the progress on the site. Any developer would be very unlikely to commit to such an approach. They cite the Brooks as an example of how development destroys archaeology, but the development brief and the report specifically rule out basements. Other questions arise. Where will you stop digging? In the medieval period? Or do you want to dig to the Roman, destroying the medieval? Will you destroy the Roman to reach the pre-Roman? The letter claims that the report mentions a Roman bath on the site. Having, unlike many of the signatories, I would suspect, actually read the report, it does not. To suggest that the archaeologists who prepared the report were choreographed from the start to get a verdict the city wanted casts serious doubts on their integrity and shows a lack of knowledge of these people. The programme set out in the report will provide significant increase in our knowledge of the site while preserving the bulk of it for future generations. And that letter is from Dick Selwood, Northview, Oremsava, Winchester.
This letter is headed Office Shortage. Sir, there is quite often mentioned in the Hampshire Chronicle and elsewhere of the shortage of office space in Winchester. Despite this assertion, I have only received 2 inquiries in 2 years about office space that I have to let that is not far from the centre of the city, although it has been advertised through agents on the internet for that period. It is sometimes suggested that all property letting is now done via the internet, which may have led to the demise of your own commercial to let column. That column used to be so helpful to those looking to lease or let small office accommodation. The internet now covers residential property reasonably well, but it does not serve the lower end of the commercial property market. Please reinstate your column adjacent to the business page. James Stanley, Millbarrow Farm, Beauworth, Alsford.
We had 2 letters about archaeology and holes in the ground. And here's another one about holes in the ground. And it comes from somebody called Potiphar the Pothole. Unlike most of my relatives, I am a marked pothole in Hairstock Road. By this, I mean that a few weeks ago, someone painted a line around me. I mistakenly thought that this might mean I was going to be repaired soon. I was wrong. Hairstock Road isn't very wide, and it's used by many large vehicles. If they want to pass one another by me, then the one on my side will have to drive over me. Constant thumping and banging with my innards being crushed even more. At the moment, I'm filled with water, so I'm even more of a hazard. Please, can someone repair me soon, before the paint mark round me wears out? Of course, I would not need to plead for repair now had I been repaired properly the first time. That comes from Potiphar the Pothole, alias Joe Windrum, Hickory Drive, Hairstock, Winchester.
Food poverty. Sir, the report about Winchester Basics Bank is timely. Winchester Labour Party members were so appalled and disgusted by the appearance of Steve Brine MP opening yet another local outlet for a seasonal photo opportunity, they donated essential food to the value of £200 just before Christmas. Through our members, it is our collective intention to continue regular donations, especially as the increasingly unacceptable national figures about food poverty are a disgrace to the nation. The Basics Bank in Winchester has 3,098 clients, referred by 160 agents from 70 agencies. Up to February, they had supplied 14,112 days of food to 637 local families. Some 439 people received clothes. The national picture continues to get worse, exacerbated by the draconian punishments of the Tory government through the implementation of universal credit. In your business news, March 22nd, you report on the MP addressing the Chamber of Commerce at a breakfast meeting. Mr. Brine continues to display a perpetual complacency about the state of his constituents, often ignoring the plight of those far less fortunate than himself. At the time of day when hundreds of children in Hampshire will have gone to school without having had any breakfast, he relishes a photo opportunity to lecture others about the wonders of this government. The figures he quoted are misleading. Most people who are unemployed cannot find work that takes them out of the poverty threshold. Many of the deprived in deep food poverty are on 0 hours contracts with no minimum guarantee of work to cover their basic needs. The working poor. They are forced to use Winchester Basics Bank to survive, excluding their opportunity for an expensive breakfast at an equally expensive Winchester hotel. And that letter is from Peter Rees, chairman of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Taking credit. Sir, I was somewhat nonplussed this week when picking up the local Lib Dem publication, The Worthies Focus. I saw a photograph and a few words showing Malcolm Prince, a local Liberal Democrat city councillor, beside the new history board in Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy, implying that the Lib Dems were responsible for getting the board placed. I would like to place on record that the placing of this history board and all the others in and around the Worthies are due to the sterling efforts of members of the Worthies local history group, supported by the parish council, and have nothing at all to do with any political party. I know that politicians, both local and national, like to be associated with good news stories, but credit should not be taken when it is not due. Karen McCleary, Chairman, Worthies Local History Group, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And finally, from Anne Gosling, a letter called Save the Badger. May I add my voice in the letters from Dominique Pengelly and Claire Davis in protest at the proposed slaughter of badgers in our county, as in the Chronicle letters March the 29th. If farmers cannot afford to vaccinate their cattle, perhaps they would accept funding from the public such as myself to do so. I support many charities and would donate to a fund set up specifically for this purpose, which should include strict enforcement of proper cattle management. Anne Gosling, Linford Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
There is, in fact, one more letter. We need the EU. Sir, in my youth, I was bombed and machine-gunned more than once, so I regard peace to be of the utmost importance. The EU, for all its faults, has helped to bring peace, not only to Northern Ireland, but also to the countries of Eastern Europe and some of the Balkan states. So undermining it seems to be foolhardy in the extreme. Last week, the importance of our membership of the EU was clearly shown to be essential when responding to Russia over its nerve agent attack in Salisbury. Isn't it time we woke up to the stupidity of Brexit? And that letter comes from Tony Burrows, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
And another one. Public ignored. So the points Mary Pearson makes in her excellent letter about Chesil Street, Chronicle March 22nd, and the development of the Chesil Lodge Extra Care Unit are timely. Not only does she make important points about the lack of architectural sensitivity and disregard for harmony with the existing buildings on this important street and entrance to Winchester, but her comments are timely. This development went ahead following well-attended workshops with local people and representatives of local organisations. As someone who attended these workshops, I keep asking myself, how was it possible for such a poor scheme to proceed, taking so little note of the input from the workshops? At a time when much positive work is being done to develop the Silver Hill 2 area, SPD, i.e. Supplementary Planning Document for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, with considerable engagement and support from local people, it will be important to ensure that the next steps do indeed reflect the qualities the people of Winchester so clearly desire. As a process, the work so far on the SPD has demonstrated the value of working with a skilled team, effective engagement, building consensus and analysis, all of which are essential for development in Winchester. But the task has only just begun. It must be sustained. It should also be the model for other major areas and sites, such as the new leisure centre at Bar End, but must be accompanied by a commitment to respond appropriately, which, alas, was not the case on Chesil Street. Councillor Liz Hutchison, WCC member for St Paul Ward, Clifton Road, Oram's Arbour, Winchester.
And thank you all for those letters. And we have one more comment, and that's the Your Say column, which Jerry is going to read for us. It's, with Brexit just under a year away, the Chronicle's roving reporter asked readers in Winchester how they feel the transition is going. Jerry will tell us their answers.
The first one is from Barbara Cooper, aged 72, owner of the Sunflower Emporium of Tegdown, said, "It's a huge mistake. I think we should have a second referendum, and anyone over the age of 65 should be excluded from the vote, including me." Tony Bathurst, 60, retail assistant at Cat Weasels of Romsey Road, said, "I didn't vote for it. We've shot ourselves in the foot, and the majority of people that did were misinformed. It's a really retrogressive step." While Steve Cannon, 59, assistant manager at Gervaid's, of Cherville Close, Chandler's Ford, said, "I don't think there should be a second referendum. I think things are going okay so far. I just wanted to leave Europe, so I'm looking forward." And Alyssa Sayers, 21, a bookseller, of Stuart Crescent Stanmore, said, "I'm very anti-Brexit, but I think we should just get it over with. I've already been impacted because I was a student, and as soon as the Brexit vote, a lot of opportunities went away."
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. All lowercase and no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could just drop in when you're in Winchester. And we have Chronicle comment now. The editor's headline this week concerns the fortunes of the Theatre Royal. For 30 years, the Theatre Royal in Winchester lurched from one financial crisis to a period of potential financial crisis. Back in the early 1990s, there were serious political attempts to cut its crucial funding. Wiser heads realised that a country town needs a decent theatre, and politicians of all parties accepted that the venue needed subsidising. A big lottery grant saw it revamped in the turn of the millennium, and the theatre carried on its uncertain cause, boosted every year by the sell-out success of its Christmas pantomimes. The exact state of its finances has never been freely discussed, but its chief executive, Derek Newland, lifted the lid at the Winchester Town Forum. For 6 of the last 7 years, it has run a loss, with a deficit reaching £90,000. But Mr. Newland grabbed the bull by the horns and says the theatre is on course to have wiped that out this year. This is welcome, if surprising, news. Theatres are not supposed to be financially independent. The Town Forum heard that the turnaround is due to tighter financial controls and putting on more shows, sweating the assets. Mr. Newland has revealed a big investment to revamp the bar and the cafe to make the theatre more welcoming during the day. This has been tried before, but perhaps now, with cafe culture so prevalent, stretching to the top of Jury Street, that theatre can reap the benefit. And we're going on to Khalid Aziz's column, First Person, this time, and David will take this one on.
From Russia with hate. What are we to do about the Russians? It's weeks since Russian double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter were found writhing on a bench in the centre of Salisbury, suffering from what seemed almost certainly to be the dastardly nerve agent Novichok. Salisbury, of all places, haven of tranquillity and quintessential Englishness. The trouble is, it's not the first time Russian nationals have been murdered in devilish ways on Britain's streets. Now, I don't actually know any Russians. I have a good friend who does, and indeed has worked with them in Moscow. He swears they can be decent individuals, which I don't doubt. Indeed, those I met on a brief visit to Moscow and St. Petersburg seemed reasonable enough. However, like most Westerners, my experience is more of the Russian abroad. The super remunerated oligarchical type with more money than sense, or indeed manners. I don't know what Russian babushkas teach their young, but manners don't appear to be high on the list. We observe Russians in London, on the ski slopes of the Alps, and in European resorts and cities. How to put this politely? They can behave like animals. They pop up anywhere. We were taking tea in a fashionable and beautifully appointed cafe in Budapest's Vörösmarty Square. In swaggered a thick-set, scowling Russian with his wife, dripping in inappropriate diamonds and furs, made up like a gargoyle. They had 3 children and 2 nannies in tow. Brushing waiters and clientele to one side, he sat precisely where he wanted to, glowering at anyone who inadvertently caught his gaze. The menace was palpable. We've only ourselves to blame. For years, the UK has tolerated oligarchical money, I have always maintained that Chelsea Football Club owner Roman Abramovich must be the most astute businessman in history to have amassed a billionaire's fortune before he was 30. The reality is more likely to do with the intricate web of post-perestroika politics within the Kremlin, creating oligarchs who could have invented the phrase, because we can. We are all corrupted by the corrupt. The buy-to-leave flats in London's new tower blocks cannot keep up with the demand for a safe haven for money from dubious sources. Hampshire's housing market is partly fueled by the London effect. I know of at least one couple who moved to our county following a knock on the door of their central London house by a Russian with an offer they couldn't refuse. Ban Russian property ownership in London, and we'd feel the breeze in Hampshire. Rightly, we were outraged by the Salisbury attack. The Russians meretriciously deny involvement, laughably demanding consular access to Skripal's daughter, Yulia, now thankfully recovering. I bet she can't wait to meet her FSB attackers, complete with the newly found bedside manner. But look into Putin's eyes as he celebrated his inevitable election to a third term. Were those the eyes of a bear-wrestling, omnipotent ruler of all he surveys? Or did I detect a glimpse of fear? Does he know he cannot leave office except in a body bag? Perhaps this is what drives Russia's murderous activity on our streets. After 9/11, George W. Bush vowed to wreak revenge on America's enemies at a place and time of our choosing. You have to hand it to Putin. His threats aren't empty. Meanwhile, we are left wondering and hand-wringing. The Cold War is back, and it feels like it's hotting up. If our cathedral cities aren't safe, where is? We must be vigilant. In public places, a swarthy young man with a rucksack attracts nervous stares. Now we're also on the lookout for thick-set, thuggish Caucasians with stars tattooed on their hands. What to do? Obviously, keep calm and carry on. But at the very least, we should also plan frequent trips to Salisbury. The people need our support, and the businesses do too.
And now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, and Jerry will read the first for us, please.
Which is headed Memories of Brasserie Blanc Before Raymond. The Hampshire Chronicle's recent coverage of the 10th anniversary of Brasserie Blanc restaurant on Dewey Street sparked memories for one of the city's oldest residents. Phil Yates, 90, local historian of Tower Street, contacted Belgarum to reminisce. I remember the Brasserie Blanc premises from the war years, when the first floor became a British restaurant under the name of Alfie's Kitchen, after King Alfred, naturally. British restaurants were communal kitchens created in 1940 to help people who'd been bombed out of their homes, run out of ration coupons, or otherwise needed help. A two-course meal would cost sixpence, in old money. Once the restaurant had closed, the tables and chairs were stacked away, ready for the onslaught of teenage boys and girls attending their youth club. I was one of them. I remember the first thing we did was open all the windows to let out the stale smell of leftover cooked cabbage and potatoes. We formed a drama group. I'm still into drama. Today, there is a painting of the kitchen on the first floor of the restaurant. The whole complex belonged to Winchester and District Cooperative Society, one part being a butcher's shop, the tiles and rails are still visible today, and the other part being a furniture shop, with a dairy along the side adjoining the Jury Street car park. Happy memories of 75 years ago. Mr. Yates, who's written about the Theatre Royal and the city's pubs, said he still meets members of the youth club more than 70 years after they were members and chat about the war years. In more recent times, the premises were the campaign headquarters for Mark Oughton in the 1997 re-election against Gerald Malone.
This part of Bilgarran, the eyes have it on the Frink horse. Ask people about statues in Winchester, and they'd probably mention two, King Alfred on the Broadway and the Horse and Rider near the Law Courts. The latter was made by Elizabeth Frink in 1975 and shows a horse and rider looking to their left and seemingly into the distance, almost as if startled. A prankster placed some eyes on the animal, making it look rather sinister or comic. The eyes have since been removed, but it has got the sculpture talked about and its general qualities admired.
And that's good news. Now we're going to move on to what I sometimes say is my favourite piece of the paper, and that's historical items. I'll start with 200 years ago. And it's Monday, April the 6th, 1818. A physician of great skill and considerable experience, being upwards of 30 years in very extensive practice, partly in the West Indies, has been settled for some months past at Alton. In this county, many persons and neighbourhood areas who were afflicted, some of them for years, with various and complicated diseases, have already been restored to perfect health by his advice. And we know his practice is eminently successful in hopeless cases. And the second item under 2 years ago, 200 years ago, I'm sorry, 200 years ago. On Wednesday, a person named Thomas in the employ of Mr. T. Aslett of Alsford was driving a wagon from Winchester to Alsford when in the act of getting up into the wagon, his foot slipped and he fell under the wheel, which passed over him. He was severely bruised and carried to Alsford.
100 years ago, Saturday, April the 6th, 1918. Women workers on the land. A very successful gathering of the above was held at Kingsworthy Rectory Room, by kind permission of the Rector and Mrs. Stretfield, on Wednesday at 5:30 p.m., when over 100 stripes for 6 months' work were presented to those women who had earned them. The district is a very scattered one, comprising the villages of Kingsworthy, Martyrworthy, Headbornworthy, Barton, Easton, Chilland, Itchenabbas, Avington, Sparsholt and Littleton. But a good number of women managed to assemble, in spite of the fact that many could not be spared from their work, and some had to walk over 7 miles. And the second item says, at the monthly meeting of the Women's Institute on Thursday afternoon, Mrs. C. F. Wood presiding, Miss Hall read an interesting paper on how to make sugar from sugar beet. Mrs. Eames of Compton sent a quantity of sugar beet seed for sale. Mrs. Wallace of Lymington also attended and gave a demonstration in boot and shoe mending.
50 years ago, Saturday, April the 6th, 1968. By the beginning of the summer, Winchester will have a new hotel, the Winton Court Hotel in Southgate Street. Alterations to the premises, formerly offices in the terrace next to the Green Man Public House, have been going ahead for about 6 weeks now, and the proprietor will be Mr. Bowler Nemeth, who already owns the St. Cross Hotel. Mr. Nemeth, who has over 10 years' experience in the hotel trade in Winchester, is opening Winton Court as a completely new enterprise on the strength of the growth of custom at his present hotel. Winton Court will have 9 bedrooms, one with a private bath, and with bathrooms and showers on each of its 4 floors. A lift will carry residents to their rooms, and the hotel will cater for a maximum of 20 people a night. Mr. Nemeth also proposes to open the hotel restaurant to non-residents and hopes to install bar facilities. Adequate car parking space is to be provided from an entrance in St. Thomas Street, and afternoon teas will be served from a terrace at the rear of the premises. The hotel will be completely modernised with new furniture, fittings and decor, and the total cost of the renovation is in the region of £20,000. And a second item, 50 years of the Royal Air Force in Hampshire and Winchester was celebrated at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Saturday with an exhibition of aircraft models, photographs and demonstrations of technique, which was opened by Lord Ashburton, KCVO, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire and High Steward of Winchester. The exhibition was attended by Viscount Portal of Hungerford, Marshal of the Royal Air Force, and Sir Alan Cobham, KBE, AFC, ONS, FRAS, one of Britain's most famous flying men, who gave a lecture from his personal knowledge. Principally, the exhibition was designed to recapture the spirit of many RAF men and their machines, who have served the various flying stations throughout the county. Photographs showed memorable moments of famous squadrons, and there were many interesting models of leading aircraft which have flown out of Hampshire on both military and civil missions since the early days of flying.
25 years ago, Friday, April the 2nd, 1993. Gerald Malone, Member of Parliament for Winchester and Alton, has hailed Hampshire County Council as an example to be copied by all other local authorities. This Conservative-controlled group recently unveiled a budget that allowed for the lowest council tax set by any of the 39 county councils in England and created over 900 new jobs at the same time. Speaking from Westminster, Mr. Malone said, "What the Conservative administration at Hampshire County Council has clearly demonstrated is that if affairs are well managed, then it is possible to provide a higher level of service for local residents without having to ask them to pay higher council tax bills. This year's budget is a clear example of excellent housekeeping. The County Council will spend some £5 million below the government and thereby save the average council tax household £51 a year. Yet the budget will create new and extended services to the tune of over £22 million. Malone also welcomed the introduction of the council tax, which came into effect this week. The tax, brought in to replace the community charge as the system of local government taxation, will be fairer to local taxpayers and simpler to administer for local authorities, he believes. And the second part of this. Love is in the air for this rare horse at Marwell Zoological Park, thanks to a computer dating agency for endangered species. No, this Przewalski, I'm not too sure of that pronunciation, has taken a shine to the zoo's biologist, Simon Wakefield, but she has him to thank for keeping her love life on the boil. Simon got European animal experts together to discuss the zoo's reintroduction programme for the horse, which became extinct in the wild some 30 years ago. The European Breeding Programme, EEP, aims to make sure the right Przelewski stallion and mare hit it off to maintain the genetic diversity of the breed. It's really very much like a computer dating agency for endangered species, said Simon, Britain's EEP representative. Natives of Mongolia and China, the horse was named after 19th century geographer Count Przelewski of Poland. They were driven close to extinction by nomads because the wild stallions disrupted domestic horses and livestock.
And now we move on to what's on. So we take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. We do not often have a what's on which involves television, so I can't resist telling you about this one. It's headed the Norman City. Winchester Cathedral is set to star on a small screen later this month in a new documentary series. Channel 4 will be airing an episode of Britain's Most Historic Towns called Norman Winchester, which will feature the cathedral on Saturday, April the 21st. In the series, academic and broadcaster Professor Alice Roberts will explore the secrets of Britain's dramatic history using cutting-edge CGI. Winchester will be the subject of the series' third episode, with others focusing on Chester, York, Norwich, Cheltenham and Belfast. So the programme is Britain's Most Historic Towns, Norman Winchester, will air at 8 p.m. on Channel 4 on the 21st of April. I hope you managed to catch that. I certainly would like to see it. So what shall we do now? Oh, there's a meeting that I'd like to tell you about. It's on Wednesday, April the 11th. It's Waking Up the Garden in Spring, Winchester Club, Worthy Road, and that's Winchester SO23 7AB. It's at 7:30. And the Winchester Horticultural Society talk by Roger Hirons would welcome all visitors. The price of the ticket is £3, and the telephone number, if you want to ring them, is 01962 866 818. So that's Waking Up the Garden in Spring at the Winchester Club. I think that sounds very appropriate and just what we need. Concerts. There's one concert here. It's Tuesday, April the 24th. It's an organ recital in Winchester Cathedral. It's at 7:45 until 9 p.m. and it features Andrew Lumsden, who is organist and director of music, Winchester Cathedral. Tickets are £8, including a glass of wine after the concert. If you haven't heard Andrew Lumsden play that magnificent organ in Winchester, do try and give that a go. So that's on April the 24th in Winchester Cathedral. Now, what's on in the theatre? Well, if you like Wind in the Willows, that's going to be featuring this summer in the beautiful gardens of Wolsey Palace by permission of the Bishop of Winchester, with a spectacular open-air production of The Wind in the Willows from July the 17th until the 21st. It's being staged by the Chesil Theatre and this is their third performance in the Wolsey Palace Gardens. The much-loved children's classic by Kenneth Graham has been adapted by Alan Bennett and will feature all the familiar characters, including Toad, Ratty, Mole and Badger, who will be performed by an adult cast, as well as some of the not-so-familiar woodland creatures who will be played by two teams of children, young people. Director Joe Ashwell said, "The Wind in the Willows has always been a favourite of mine. It's a tale about adventure, courage and friendship, and provides a lot of scope with a combined cast of adults and children, which is something I really enjoy. I'm looking forward to bringing the tales of the riverbank life for the Chesil Theatres, and they can't wait to begin rehearsals. I can vouch for that because I'm part of that company, and it will be a very nice show. Now, there is a new theatre in Southampton. It's part of the Nuffield organisation, and it's called the Nuffield Southampton Theatres, NST. And from the 17th to the 21st of April, the NST campus are staging Birdsong, a beautiful, haunting story by Sebastian Faulks. I thoroughly recommend it. You can book on 023-806-71771. That's 023-806-71771. And as I say, that's Sebastian Faulks' beautiful story, Birdsong. And another theatre activity at the Winchester Science, at the Mayflower. This is the Mayflower. It's the musical, Titanic the Musical, on Thursday, April the 12th, until Saturday, April the 21st. And that is at the Mayflower Theatre. And the box office is 01962 863 791. That's Southampton 02380 01 1811. And finally, there is an item of Birdsong, yes, I've given to you. Plaza Theatre in Ronzi is having the New Jersey Boys, and that's a one-night stand of rock music, I think, and a really enjoyable experience that will be. That's at the box office of the Plaza Theatre Royal, 01794 512 987. And that's all the what's on from us this time. So, as I say, that's all that there is from what's on. But before the general news, we're going to give you the lighting up times starting on Saturday the 7th of April. The sun will set at 7:48 p.m. and on Wednesday the 11th of April, the sun will rise at 6:19 a.m. and will set at 7:54 p.m., getting lighter every evening. Now, on to the general news. Jerry, can we have your first item, please? Thank you.
Which is sort of connected to the lovely letter from Joy Windrum, disguised as a pothole. This is headed, "Over £1 million paid out as human cost of poor roads is revealed." More than £1 million of taxpayers' cash has been paid out in compensation to Hampshire motorists due to potholes, it has been revealed. The majority of this total came from Hampshire County Council, which shelled out £891,847 between 2013 and 17 to cover damage to vehicles and injuries. This includes £113,568 to cyclists alone, including Winchester woman Janet Smith, who was cycling with her husband Richard in Winchester when she was forced to the edge of the road by a passing car and hit a pothole. She lost control and suffered concussion, severe cuts, bruises to her knees, elbows and face, and knocked her two top teeth out. She needed 15 stitches to the inside and outside of her mouth and was in hospital for 2 days. The damage to her teeth has left her with £3,000 in dental fees. The authority's most expensive year was 2015, when it spent £361,821, with its cheapest year coming last year, spending only £58,483. It also splashed out £218,031 in legal costs defending claims. Southampton City Council was found to have spent a combined £168,424 in the same period. In total, both authorities spent £1.27 million on compensation and legal costs. The figures were unearthed through the Freedom of Information requests submitted by Cycling UK, which runs Fill That Hole, a pothole reporting app. Sam Jones, Cycling UK's senior campaigns officer, said, "Cycling UK's research has shown the true cost is a human one, as people cycling are suffering from personal injury and even in the worst cases, dying. The government should concentrate on fixing the underlying problems of our current local roads network before building new ones." A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "Because Hampshire is one of the largest counties, with many more miles of road to look after than most, it's inevitable that the number of pothole claims is larger than those in a smaller authority. A better comparison would be to look at the number of claims per 100 miles of highways, where Hampshire compares very favourably with others in the South East and England generally. Hampshire County Council remains committed to providing well-maintained roads and to minimising pothole numbers, always looking for efficient, value for money and innovative ways to look after Hampshire's roads." It comes just days after the government pledged an extra £3 million to Hampshire County Council to help mend damaged roads.
And this follows on quite neatly from the end of the last item, and it's headed, "More cash needed to fill in potholes." "Millions more will be spent on fixing Hampshire's crumbling roads, but angry residents and drivers say the cash will only tackle the tip of the iceberg. The cash from central government will go towards filling in potholes and repairing damage from the beast from the east. But furious motorists and councillors say the extra funding is not enough, and have called for millions more to be pumped into the county. The government says it will give Hampshire County Council an extra £3 million, while Southampton City Council will receive nearly £200,000. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "With our budgets already under pressure, we estimate we would need around three times as much as we have been allocated to restore the roads to the condition they were in before the snow and ice. And following years of reduced council funding and rising demand, that was far from ideal. For some years in Hampshire, we have taken the asset management approach now promoted by the government, using money for highways maintenance in the most effective and efficient way. We've had to put an extra £10 million each year from local money to do this, making the roads more resilient to the impact of severe weather. One-off funding is welcome, but it's not going to solve the long-term problems of deteriorating local roads." Hampshire County Council leader Roy Perry added that extra teams of pothole busters have been deployed. He said, "Safety comes first, which is why we had extra gangs out on the ground as soon as possible after the snow and cold weather to start tackling potholes on our roads. Hampshire Highways gangs are using pre-prepared material, which doesn't need any mixing on site and is specially designed to work in cold and damp conditions." This means the gangs can fix more potholes each day than by conventional methods. But he added that the repairs won't all be long-term, and that the recent cold weather has certainly added to the damage and deterioration of the roads. Transport Secretary Chris Grayling has promised Southampton £190,285 and Hampshire County Council £2.95 million out of a total of £100 million for the country. It is on top of £75 million in government funding already given to councils from the Pothole Action Fund this year, as well as the additional £46 million boost for highways authorities announced just before Christmas, according to a Department for Transport statement. Mr. Grayling said people rely on good roads to get to work and to see friends or family. We've seen an unusually prolonged spell of freezing weather which has caused damage to our local roads. We are giving councils even more funding to help repair their roads. All road users can enjoy their journeys without having to dodge potholes. Many of the problems have been blamed on the recent bad weather. The county was hit by two separate blasts of snow and ice last month as wintry conditions blew in from Russia.
Marathon feat nearly over, we hope, yesterday. Hampshire man John Sennett was just hours away from completing his 21 marathon challenge, despite all the unusually wintry weather doing all it could to get in his way. John from Southampton set out last month with the goal of completing 21 marathons over 21 days at Winchester Sports Stadium to raise money to tackle Crohn's disease and colitis. He was set to complete the challenge yesterday, crossing the finishing line at around 5 p.m. after completing 105 more laps of the athletics track. As previously reported, John's efforts were postponed when the beast from the east dumped snow across the county, but he failed to let that get in the way. John said, "My sister Rosemary was diagnosed with Crohn's disease at the age of 19 and 2 years later suffered a stroke. This challenge is really to tell her story and to use my influence to help make an impact. There's no current cure for the illness, yet I have a target of £21,000 to help find a cure." John began his challenge on March the 10th. So far, he has raised more than £1,500. To support him, visit www.justgiving.com/fundraising/John's21marathons in 21 days.
Maundy Honour. A Winchester woman has been honoured by the Queen, receiving a ceremonial coin on Maundy Thursday at St George's Chapel in Windsor. The recipients of Maundy money are older men and women recommended by clergy and ministers of all denominations for the Christian service they have given. The award was distributed to 91 men and 91 women from across the country, representing each of the Queen's 92 years. The four recipients from the Diocese of Winchester were Anita Clark, 81, from Winchester, Peter Moore, 88, from Odiham, the Reverend Pat Brown, 80, from Tadley, and Mike Cranston, 71, from Southampton. Ms. Clark was recognised for her 40 years of service to charitable and social work in Hampshire. Her remarkable selflessness has seen her care for over 30 foster children, many with significant learning disabilities, set up the Brass Cancer Group in Winchester, fundraise for cancer charities, and subsequently become a vice president of Hampshire's leading homeless charity. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said, "I'm very pleased that Anita Peter, Pat and Mike have been deservedly recognised by the Queen for the enormous contributions that they've made to their communities and the life of the church.
Let there be light. City councillors have called for action over the poor state of the pavements and lighting in Andover Road. At the latest Barton Farm Forum, Councillor Jackie Porter asked for an update on a 1.5 kilometre section of Andover Road within the development, which is currently unlit. At night, it's pitch black and dangerous and difficult for people to walk down, she said. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "The pavements are appalling. You would not want to try and walk down there with a pushchair and a toddler." Councillor Martin Todd put forward a resolution passed unanimously that the County Council provide an urgent update on improvements to pavements and lighting to areas of Andover Road within Phase 1B of the Kings Barton development. A spokesperson from Carla Holmes said that although there was no planning requirement for the lights, they understood the needs and concerns of the residents and councillors.
Road diversion row reignited. The rerouting of a major Winchester road has been pushed into the spotlight once again after an election leaflet argued there is still time to reverse the controversial decision. Some residents in the district have been sent leaflets from the Wanston and Mitteldever Conservatives saying they are backing a call for common sense to keep Andover Road open. The issue of rerouting the road, which will form part of the King's Barton Farm Estate, currently being built, has been raised numerous times, including by Hampshire's Transport Chief, Councillor Rob Humby. In November, Councillor Humby told the Chronicle the County Council would be prepared to review the future of the road following the consultation over the Winchester Movement strategy. However, Winchester City Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury dashed hopes, saying that although the route can be amended by the proper authorities, the current location was enshrined in the planning decision for the estate. A change would require Kings Barton developers Carla to submit a revised planning application, something they have no intention of doing. Now, former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davies has accused Council Leader Caroline Horrell and Councillor Stephen Godfrey, both ward councillors in Wanston and Mitteldever, of misleading voters by insinuating in election material that the decision could be changed. Mr. Davies, who opposed the rerouting of the road when it was proposed in 2012, said at a meeting of the Barton Farm Forum, "They are giving the impression it can be readdressed, and it's simply untrue." The issue was pushed further by Lib Dem Councillor Martin Todd, who asked when Andover Road was expected to be completed. A Carla representative said that the diversion needed to be in place prior to the 650th occupancy. He added, "We currently have about 100, and at the current rate, let's say it's around another 5 years." Defending the campaign material, Councillor Godfrey said the council opposed the rerouting of Andover Road and that he would continue to do so.
Nurses stride out for hospice. A group of district nurses will be putting on their hiking boots to help fund a new hospice in Winchester. The Winchester Rural East, WRE, Integrated Care Team, who are renaming themselves the WRE Hospice Hikers for the challenge, will be walking around a 25-mile patch that they cover on Saturday as part of the campaign to build a new Winchester hospice. The team of eight, who provide nursing, treatment and support in patients' homes, will start at Alsford Surgery before heading to West Meon Surgery and Mansfield Park Surgery in Four Marks and then back to Alsford. Campaigners have launched a £2.5 million bid to convert Burrell House in the grounds of Royal Hampshire County Hospital into a 10-bed hospice. Winchester currently doesn't have a hospice, so the new facility will allow patients and their families to spend less time travelling to receive care or visit a loved one. The hospice will also host day therapy and outpatient facilities, as well as a hospice at home service, which will support patients who wish to remain in their own home when they are in their last few weeks. It will be run by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which also runs the RHCH, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and the Andover War Memorial Hospital.
Ex-pupil inspires Polar Day. Schoolchildren have paid tribute to a former pupil who made Antarctic history with their own Polar Day. Former St Swithin student Captain Zanna Baker and her fellow Ice Maiden teammates made history in late December when they became the first all-female group to cross the continent using only their own muscle power. The six-strong team travelled more than 1,000 miles in 62 days, each pulling a sledge of equipment weighing 80 kilograms. Following the successful challenge, Year 4 pupils took part in a Polar Day to mark the occasion, where pupils discovered the clothing, food and equipment they would need to survive in polar regions and had the chance to try on some of the gear themselves. They also learned about the dangers of crevasses and ended the day by making their own glaciers from plasticine and corn flour. St Swithin's junior school head teacher Rebecca Lyon-Smith said, "We are incredibly proud of what Zanna has achieved. She is a true inspiration to everybody at the school. Our students are really enjoying learning about the polar regions and the challenges that explorers can face." Sixth form students also use the Ice Maiden's achievements to examine what teamwork coupled with great captaincy can achieve during one of their leadership training days. Sixth form student Somtona Aniazan said, "Zanna has demonstrated what we can accomplish by learning to be a good leader and also a good team player."
Covert scheme on track. A scheme to revitalise a Winchester city centre feature is back on track. The County Council has been drawing up plans for a revamp of St Morris's Covert off the High Street. But Councillor Liz Hutchinson told the Town Forum last Wednesday that since Senior Officer Eloise Appleby left the authority last year, the project seems to have lost momentum. Steve Tilbury, Corporate Director, said the updated proposals were being redrawn to improve the area in the near future. The unsightly waste bins have been moved to a new location at the nearby Colebrook Street car park. In the past, the covert has been a gathering point for antisocial behaviour. The undercover area is also regularly used for charity markets. It was created in the 1950s following the demolition of St Morris's Church, except for its tower.
£24,000 hate crime project. 40 schools will take part in a £24,000 project to tackle intolerance. The cash has been awarded by Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane for a project to tackle hate crime. The Heartstone Odyssey programme uses fiction, photo documentary and historical themes to raise social issues with children and young people, and is endorsed by the National Counter-Terrorism Policing Headquarters. Now, schools in Hampshire have been nominated to take part as part of Mr Lane's hate crime strategy. Charting a heroine's quest to overcome intolerance and prejudice, it is specifically aimed at school children in the critical transition phase between primary and secondary school. Mr. Layden said, "I'm delighted to be sponsoring this important project. Having listened to and spoken with some of the children involved, I'm encouraged by their ambition and energy to do what is right and create a better future without discrimination, prejudice, and hate crime. Inclusive communities where everyone can realise their life potentialities means less demand on stretched services, and the best way to achieve a more cohesive society is to teach and encourage the right values at a young age."
Firms set to sue government over British passport production plan. A Hampshire firm is preparing to take the government to court over plans to award a contract to produce blue British passports to a Franco-Dutch firm. Basingstoke-based De La Rue said it was the highest quality and technically most secure option for producing the post-Brexit travel document, warning it was in the national interest to ditch the Home Office's preferred choice. De La Rue, which has a paper mill facility in Overton, has accepted it is a more expensive option, but the company has cast doubt on the sustainability of the rival quote. "We confirm that we are taking the first steps towards initiating appeal proceedings against the provisional decision to award the British passport contract to a part state-owned Franco-Dutch company," a spokeswoman said.
Well, thank you all very much for reading those articles. And that is the end of our Hampshire Chronicle extracts for you this week. Before we go, I'd like to just give you another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. And her number again is 01962 870 370. That number must be very familiar to you now. It's 01962 870 370. Well, thank you to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
David.
Goodbye.
Thank you for coming to see us and read with us. And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you. Have a very good week, and we hope the sunshine continues for you. Until the next time, goodbye.